Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today, recapping all of the madness from the trade deadline. Before we get underway, just a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so we'd love you to give us a follow as well. You can find us this year on iTunes, so please check us out there. Subscribe, download, leave us some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Zach Harper, formerly of CBS Sports, is writing for us through the end of the year. He's had a lot of great stuff about the trade deadline and the fallout from that, so check out FanRag for all that great content. Joining me today, as always, are Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea to help me sort through the madness. How's it going, you two?
It's going well, Brian.
Going all right, so long as my MacBook hangs in there.
Yeah,
brave, we all, brave little soldier.
We all need to pray for Sarah's computer. It's apparently on its last legs here. So, Sarah, I'm going to start off with you because you are a responsible person and couldn't have an emergency podcast at like 10:30 on a Monday morning. So you were unable to join us for our emergency DeMarcus Cousins reaction. So I want to just, before we go into the actual trade deadline, just get some quick thoughts from you on the Boogie trade, the return, how you see them working. You know, we've seen them together for one game now, how you see that partnership moving forward, et cetera.
Yeah, first of all, I love that you guys, you know, put it out there that I'm responsible. I heard that on the first one y'all did without me. And I was like, should I tell them that the other day I had up this picture of these new like NECA quarter scale Ninja Turtles? And I was like, should I pay my health insurance or should I get these turtles? So yes, very responsible. But the Boogie trade, I mean, obviously I think it's going to work out fine for the Pelicans eventually. They need to make more moves and get some shooting. Everybody knows that, but those guys are going to be fine. DeMarcus said after the first game that they were kind of, you know, deferring to one another a little bit rather than just playing their game. And that's going to happen till they get comfortable, but they'll be perfectly fine. As for the Kings, I think what we're seeing is what happens when an organization doesn't have like a clear strategy and that nobody's on the same page. You know, say what you want about Vlade, and he has his own foibles, but I think what becomes more obvious is that as long as Vivek is there and has the power that he has, it doesn't really matter who else you bring in because he's got his own ideas and they're pretty much going to have to follow him. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's sad. It kind of brought me back to the conversation that we had a while back about why Boogie would want to opt in and go for the extension.
Right.
And I was joking about how, well, as long as he's there, there's kind of the added bonus of, you know, his outbursts will always be partially blamed on the Kings.
Right.
Which I didn't think was his motivation, but I thought it would be an interesting byproduct. But then the Kings kind of flipped everything around and tried to ship him off and blame all their problems on him. So that was amazing. But
yeah,
I mean, I think everyone knows that there was always, they were always kind of contributing to each other's problems, and the Kings are far from blameless here.
Yeah.
And so it's just going to become more obvious now that he's gone. So I don't think they thought that one through.
Yeah. We recorded, but I think more, correct me if I'm wrong, but we recorded before Vlade's press conference on Monday where he, you know, had that meltdown. Is like, well, I had a better offer 2 days ago, but I had to just take this one now. I mean, Sarah, I think you're spot on, especially with like the Kings trying to blame DeMarcus for all their problems is just complete and utter crap because clearly, you know, the way they handled this, like there were so many reports that came out in the weeks and months leading up to that trade that said, you know, they're not going to trade him. They're going to sign him to this mm-hmm. massive deal. And then for them to just like outright lie, like, you know, he gave an interview with the Undisputed's Mark J. Spears where he's saying, like, a week before the trade, they came to his house and said, we are not going to trade you. Heading into the All-Star break, Vivek went to him and was trying to, like, consult him on a player move to see, like, hey, you know, how do you want, like, what, do you think this guy would fit with us? And then 3 days later, they trade him. So, you know, they issued that press release that said, like, winning begins with character and culture matters. It's like, all right, yeah, it begins with you having character. Like,
you had culture, yeah. You guys right. don't have one, except one of, like, you know, dysfunction. That's
yeah,
it.
Like lying to your star player and telling him he's not going to get traded, and then actually going and trading him while he's playing in the All-Star game. That's just, yeah. All right, winning begins with character. Sure, okay. Good luck. Good luck, Kings. Like, now, after reading that interview with Mark J. Spears, I hope no, like, superstar caliber free agent ever signs with the Kings again, because they do not deserve it as long as Vivek and Vlade are still in charge. It sucks. I feel really bad for Kings fans, but, like, if you're a superstar, why do you want to go to that organization now? It's absurd.
No, you don't. Unless, I mean, and you're not a superstar if you're Derrick Rose, but Derrick Rose might, you know, go there if the money's right.
Right.
Although, could you just imagine, like, him in restricted free agency this summer, like, reports are coming out with Vlade and Derek flirting a little bit, whatever, and then somewhere, Derek ends up with a different team. Vlade's interviewing, like, I gave him better offer 2 days ago. Yeah. Now he don't take. Don't right. understand why. It right. doesn't make sense. One day I offered him $100 million. Last night I offered him 60, and he said, "What are you doing, man? I will not take a lesser offer." I do not understand this CPA thing. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
This is basically where we're at. I mean, this the level of incompetency is, you know, let's just say it, it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of enjoying it. Not for Kings fans. I feel so bad for those. But for the organization, like, they painted themselves into a corner. So right now, just laugh your asses off, guys, because they earned it.
Yeah. 100%. And you're so right. I mean, even before they traded Boogie, I really thought they were going to trade for Derrick Rose. And I, like, Rudy Gay plus Darren Collison for Derrick was cap legal. So I thought, by far, that was, like, almost a lock to happen. But then they, you know, changed course. And the fact then that they didn't trade anyone else at the trade deadline, like, they had, you know, Ben McElroy is going to be a restricted free agent this summer. Darren Collison's a free agent this summer. Ty Lawson's a free agent this summer. The fact they traded none of those guys is insane. Like, if you want to rebuild,
yeah.
go in and rebuild. Because right now you have about 7 shooting guards on the roster. And the prize piece, the guy who shoots like Steph Curry, Buddy Hield, he's a shooting guard. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. All right. We can't talk about the Kings dysfunction anymore. It just makes me so mad. But I'm, again, so sorry for Kings fans. If you need a franchise to join, Sarah Spurs are very, very quiet and understated. They win 50 games every year. So become a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to the actual trade deadline. You know, we talk about the Sixers and the Bulls a lot on this podcast, given Morton and I, we have this, you know, certain rooting interests, and we're going to have to talk about them today. Apologies in advance, but they made arguably the two dumbest, most controversial, et cetera, moves at the deadline. The Sixers on Wednesday sent out Ersan Ilyasova and what will amount to the Warriors' second-round pick to Atlanta for Tiago Splitter, who's probably not going to play. Miami's second-rounder, which is protected 31-40, and Atlanta's second-rounder. So basically, they got a second-round pick and a second-round pick swap for Ersan. Then on Thursday morning, it was all quiet. You know, no Woj bombs were dropping. And then I think around 11 a.m., Woj reports they are in advanced talks to sending Nerlens Noel to Dallas. And then 3 minutes later, he reports the exact terms. So advanced talks quickly accelerated to finished. So they sent Nerlens to Dallas for Justin Anderson, Andrew Bogut, who I don't think they've actually waived him yet, but they're going to, and a top 18 protected first round pick, which will otherwise become 2017 and 2020 second rounders if it does not convey this year, which it will not. You have to just analyze this as two second rounders. So before I give my take, Mort, I want to hear your side, because you were live streaming while all this madness went down. So what do you think of both the decision to trade Nerlens and the return?
Well, I was actually doing a 4-hour live stream in a studio here in Denmark. Man, I had a headache afterwards because talking for 4 hours, that takes a lot out of you. So when the trade came up, I kind of liked it initially because the first round draft pick hadn't been specified.
Right.
It just said like a first round draft pick, and I kind of assumed there would be some level of protection on it. But I thought it would be like maybe top three or something,
yeah.
Top five maybe. Then it came out later on, and it was top 18 protected. I was like, okay, now it's not good.
Right.
Now it's like a middle of the pack trade. They could have gotten better. And then later on, it came out that if it's not conveyed by this year, it becomes 2 second-rounders. And then I went from an okay trade to being, all right, that's not right bad.
Yeah.
Like, I love Justin Anderson. I think he'll do so well in Philly, but it's Nerlens Noel after all. Like, he is going to be a perennial Defensive of the Year candidate. You should have gotten a lot better because that pick is not going to be conveyed. Like, Dallas right now, if you look at Tankathon,
yeah, right.
They're fifth.
Yeah.
They're not going to drop outside the 18th.
No.
So you traded Nerlens Noel for Justin Anderson and 2 second-rounders.
Yeah.
And that is appalling value.
Yes, that is indisputable.
But let's flip it around. Dallas did well.
Yeah, right. Dallas. Kudos to Dallas for just ripping off Brian Colangelo to an extreme degree. Sarah, I want to hear how before I give my response. I want to hear how you think Nerlens is going to fit in Dallas. And do you think they should sign him long term as a piece to build around with Harrison Barnes?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm kind of mad, especially you guys in your Eastern Conference GMs just keep making the West better and really, yeah. Really not appreciating that. But yeah, I mean, obviously they picked him up for almost nothing, and now, yeah, they got a solid piece for the future. I mean, the comparison has been made many times over already, but that he could be like a Tyson Chandler piece, rolling to the rim and obviously protecting the rim on the other end. So, yeah, they're pretty set, and I don't like that as someone who has not been a Mavericks fan. In fact, pretty much despised them for most of my NBA fandom. But it's funny because when the trade first went through, Brian, I went to your Twitter to see how you were responding. And at first you were taking it really well.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, okay.
Right.
And then, you know, some of the details came out about the protections that you were like, okay, not great.
Yep.
And then you kind of, you know, talked yourself back around a little bit. But yeah, I'm waiting with bated breath to see what you have to say here.
Yeah, that steady trickle, as Morton described, of like, it's a protected first round pick, it's a top 18 protected first round pick, it then immediately becomes 2 second-round picks. That was just like gut punch after gut punch after gut punch. So that one hurt. So yeah, if you look at my Twitter feed, it like descends progressively into madness throughout Thursday. But then I talked, you know, so Steve Kyler of Basketball Insiders has been reporting for months now that Nerlens wanted out. He was likely to be traded by the deadline. He was the only one kind of with that steady stream, whereas like the Okafor trade rumors were the big ones leading up to the deadline. So it was like, in retrospect, I guess we should have seen this coming. But he said something, he sent off some tweet about how like a lot of front offices are going to get overhauled this summer. So naturally some, you know, process person tweeted him was like, Brian Colangelo too, right? He's like, no, Brian Colangelo's been there for a year. He's doing fine with the hand he was dealt. So then that naturally led the process people like a swarm of locusts to his account. And I like reached out to him and was like, hey, you know, did Nerlens' agent ever like threaten Colangelo and say he's going to sign the qualifying offer if they don't trade him? Like, he's not going to re-sign in restricted free agency. And Kyler was like, no, it never got that far. He made clear they wanted out, and the organization respected that and was like, we're going to trade you. So, like, that was the thing. Initially, I was mad because, you know, the theory is like, all right, if you're, you know, if you're going to trade him for Justin Anderson in 2 second-round picks, why not just re-sign him, trade him for late, you know, trade him a year or two down the line once you see Embiid can be healthy? That, you know, I wanted to re-sign him for Embiid insurance, but if the organization is like respecting his wishes, I don't hate it as much. Like I agree it's garbage value for a player, you know, who is really, as Mort said, has defensive, like all defensive team, if not defensive player of the year upside. And I think he's going to crush it in Dallas. Like I'm so excited to see him there because he's going to, you know, he's going to a team that is devoid of centers. He's going to mesh really well with both Dirk and Harrison Barnes as a small ball four. So I'm excited for Nerlens. But yeah, I mean, if it's a matter of, you know, if you're just looking at the on-court fit, obviously Okafor is a much worse fit. Nerlens is a much better fit. If you're concerned about paying him $90 million to be a backup, I get that as well, but that's still like a little flimsy. You probably could have traded him later. But if it was like his agents came and said, look, he wants out, and the Sixers are like, all right, we respect that. We're not going to hold you hostage. We're not going to do what, you know, remember like New Orleans with Eric Gordon a couple years back where he said like, my heart is in Phoenix. And then New Orleans is like, well, you're a restricted free agent, so screw you. You're staying here. And that marriage like never really worked out, mostly due to Eric Gordon injuries. Like, I respect the Sixers for, you know, honoring Nerlens' wishes and being like, yeah, we get it. You want to be a starter. You want to make more money down the road. Like, if you stay in Philly 4 years as a backup, you're not going to get a huge third contract. So, yeah, I've come around on it. The one thing I will say, if, like, you knew this was coming. I mean, even since the preseason, Nerlens has been saying, you know, it's complete shit that we've had three centers on the roster. Like, we should have done something in the summer. Which all but implies his agents came to Colangelo once he was hired and said, like, trade me, I'm going to leave otherwise. So that makes me think that the Colangelo, he didn't screw up by trading New Orleans. He screwed up by not trading him earlier. And he, you know, mm-hmm. he blamed, at the press conference yesterday, he's like, well, you know, we hadn't seen Embiid play a game yet. Okafor was coming off a knee surgery. New Orleans was, like, penciled in as our starting center. Which... That's just so flimsy because you still have Rashawn Holmes on the roster. Like, you also, you're not, like, you gave Nerlens and Embiid 8 minutes together. You never gave them a chance to see if they were actually had, you know, they looked like in those 8 minutes they played well together, but we never saw whether that partnership could thrive. So there was never a consideration to keep Nerlens around long term. So, like, to say he was penciled in as our starting center, so what? Go trade him for a center and a pick. Like, there are ways to get another center without relying on Nerlens. So that's the thing that gets me mad. Also, the fact that they're framing it, if you looked at their press release, it was Sixers trade Nerlens Noel for a first-round pick, Justin Anderson, and Andrew Bogut, which is garbage. Like, It is 2 second-round picks. Do not frame it as a first-round pick. Justin Anderson is the big haul from this trade. And I agree, Mort, he might do well in Philly. Like, it's the question is if he can develop that jump shot, but he's a good defensive player. There wasn't much depth on the wing behind Robert Covington. Like, Timothy Luwawu and Gerald Henderson has been seeing some minutes at the three. So I think Justin Anderson will be – he fills a need for the next couple of years. He's team-controlled through 2018-2019. So, he could be a player. Like, he's had a rough year this year, but he showed flashes as a rookie. Framing it as the first round pick is the big haul is garbage. But, you know, those are the two things that get me angry about this trade. But the overall rationale, I understand it. I don't love it, but I understand it. Are you guys surprised that I'm not slamming Colangelo harder here?
No, because you did a little bit, yeah. I get it. The framing is awful, and the fact that it came out, like you mentioned, in slow punches was also very unnecessary. Yeah. It just took Philly fans through a whirlwind of emotions. Mm-hmm. It seems to me it's a bad way to end the relationship with Noel because he seems somewhat universally loved in Philly. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't seen any members of the Philly fan base really be against him all that much.
Yeah.
But maybe I've just been lucky in that sense.
No.
I haven't seen any backlash to Noel, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least, hey, man, at least you kept your little Okafor, right?
Hey, man. We're don't count your chickens before they hatch, because I'm pretty sure he's still going to end up in Chicago this summer. once they trade Jimmy Butler away. So
for him probably.
Yeah. Oh my god, that would be amazing. So let's go to your Bulls, Mort, because they also made what one could describe as a head scratching trade. They sent Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, and a 2018 second round pick to OKC for Cameron Payne, Joffrey LeVern, and Anthony Morrow. And so immediately when I saw that trade, I tweeted Sarah and I was like, aren't you so mad we don't speak Danish so we could watch Morton melt down in real time? And then you sent me a link to your live stream later, and I'm very disappointed because you did not melt down. You kind of just had like your eyes glazed over and you just had like a dead inside look, but it wasn't like the hot seething rage that I anticipated. So please, my friend, rage away.
Well, I'm honestly not really that upset anymore. I'm becoming numb. Like, I said this a couple of months ago, and it's just turning more and more true the more stupid things they do. So I'm actually going to look at it from OKC's perspective instead.
Okay.
You know, I don't even want to give the Bulls the satisfaction of talking about them. Taj Gibson is a pro's pro. I think Westbrook is absolutely going to love him. Mm-hmm. I think he has the same workhorse mentality that Westbrook has. I think he'll instantly connect with him. I think Doug McDermott is going to add so much to that specific roster, especially because he's locked on his rookie deal for another year after this. Mm-hmm. So he's going to give Russ some space. He can play the small ball four on occasion. He needs to get better as a screener. He needs to get better as a defender. But when Doug is on, he has a little bit of Paul Pierce to his game, like in not Paul Pierce-esque way, but like he can do some things. He can go to the mid-post and pull up or go to the fade. And he even has a little bit of a post game. Like, there's a little bit of that creation level to him that he doesn't really show a whole lot. But when he does, then he's really, really good. And I have a feeling that he would develop that bet a little bit better elsewhere than Chicago. So coming to a team like OKC, who has done a pretty good job of developing players over the years. I mean, let's be fair. Russell, KD, Ibaka, Harden, even Reggie Jackson. Mm-hmm. Like, Jeff Green, all right, he's very...
No Jeff Green slander.
But He was a contributor for a while. Then he went to Boston and things got mucked up. But I have a feeling he's going to realize his potential a little bit better. And Taj, I don't know if he's going to re-sign with Thunder. Depends on how long they're going to go in the playoffs, I think. But I love the defensive nature of having a guy who can switch on to smaller players, who is just tough as nails inside. He's not the type of guy who's going to grab 12 boards and swat four shots. But he's going to be a guy who will just make the right play. If he sees that Russ has a better angle on the rebound, he'll box his opponent out instead and let Russ grab it. He's not a stat whore by any
right,
like any measuring stick at all. Like, right. Taj doesn't care about numbers, and I think that's exactly what they need in OKC. Just a guy who's tremendously unselfish. So I'm really giving OKC for that particular trade like an A+. I love it for him. Yep. Absolutely love it for him because they gave up virtually nothing.
Right.
Even got a second rounder in a deal. Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. Like, it feels like OKC should have been the one giving up a second rounder in this deal. Like, I don't see why Chicago gave up a pick as well as, you know, because Taj and Doug right now are the two best players in that trade. Like, the idea is that Cameron Payne maybe thrives outside of OKC because he was never going to blossom behind Westbrook. But it just, my God, like, why did they give up a pick with those two players? It's insanity.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's why it's a great trade for the Thunder. I mean, look, they had Cameron Payne, who's shooting 33% from the field this year. I think he has a PER of 6 or something along those lines. So, I mean, they saw a guy like OKC did. They had a young guy, I think he's 22, and they leveraged the hell out of him. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they argued for the Bulls that this is a young point guard.
Yep.
So why don't you get involved? And like, congratulations, Thunder. They swindled them completely. And that's that's a job well done. That's what they're supposed to be doing.
The best way I saw this framed, it was from Kelly Scaletta, who is an assistant editor at FanRag, and he put it in the terms of, I forget exactly what the Bulls gave up to get Doug McDermott. I know it was 2 first-round picks. I think there was a second round pick involved as well.
But in total they gave up 5 draft picks.
Yeah, so he was like, they gave up 5 draft picks plus a second rounder plus Taj Gibson for Cameron Payne.
That makes it 6 picks in total. They gave up 5 picks to acquire him initially, gave up another second rounder. So basically, the whole Doug McDermott affair cost them 6 draft picks.
Yeah. That's the Chicago Bulls. So, Sarah, do you have any hope that Cameron Payne? I mean, it's a very low bar to be the best point guard in Chicago right now, but do you think he has a chance of blossoming into a player worthy of 6 draft picks?
I love how you laugh as you're asking that. he could end up being a player. It's hard to say. I mean, 6 draft picks sounds ridiculous, but, you know, I don't understand what they're trying to do. Obviously, they need a point guard for the future. I don't know that they're sold on Cam being it, but I don't really understand the move. They got younger somewhat, but not better, really. I don't know. I have no idea what they're trying to do, honestly.
I think you join the front office, because it doesn't seem like they have any idea what they want to do. Given the leaks that came out, you know, especially from Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times, and even Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer had some stuff just about how it sounds like there are warring factions within the front office now. Like, Foreman wants to stand pat, and it sounds like John Paxson realizes, like, okay, we might need to actually rebuild now and trade Jimmy Butler or whatever. But it sounds like Gar isn't just in, like, pure job preservation mode, so it's like, we're just gonna stay mediocre forever and, like, maybe make the playoffs, and then I'm gonna keep my job, because if we tank, then I'm out. So It's gonna be fun.
I didn't want to talk about the Bulls, but I'm gonna, because you left out something that's even stupider.
Oh, okay. Go.
Apparently, when the Bulls discussed Jimmy with Boston, they made it clear that they wanted veterans.
Right. Yeah.
They wanted established players.
Yeah.
And supposedly both Brooklyn picks were in the conversation, and the Bulls were like, no, we want Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley because we don't want to rebuild. And yeah, it's look, it's so stupid that I don't even have the words for it. I can't comprehend the level of insight that they have into team building. It's remarkable, really. And the backlash, again, from national media, from local media, from fans, from everyone. Everyone is understanding of the fact that the Bulls are messing this thing up, except for the Bulls, except for the actual Bulls themselves, but they don't care because they have job security.
Yeah.
And this is the part of the game that becomes horrible, because, look, in the NBA, loyalty is valued, like highly, highly valued, and that's great. Loyalty is important, is essential, it's crucial, but not when you're incompetent. You need to be able to cut your losses. Right now, the Bulls have an owner who's looking at the bottom line. That's fine, but that's short-sighted. Here's my opinion on it. Because if you have an owner who's saying, you know what, I just want to earn a whole lot of money, and if that means we're the 8th seed every year, that's fine, I'll live with it. Well, you know what, if you're looking for to earn more money, then you build a competitive team, because people would be more inclined to throw money at a competitive team. Right now, the United Center, they might sell out in terms of ticket, but no one's showing up. Like, you have a lot of people who don't show up. TV ratings are declining rapidly. Like, people are generally losing interest in the Bulls now.
Yeah.
And if they had been a team that had just told the fan base straight off the bat, you know, we're going to rebuild, we're going to try to create the best product for you, then teams would actually, fans would have gone to the games, because they would have known what's up. They would have recognized, all right, you know what? You're right. We need to blow this up. It's not working. So we'll support you by actually going to the game, and we'll enjoy looking at our Markelle Fultz or whatever rookies we're going to have instead. We're going to support those guys. But no. Instead, the focus is so driven financially that it's appalling. It is downright unattractive. Because it's the whole underlying theme of every move that they make. Dwayne Wade, like, come on, let's be honest. He wasn't there to improve them. Right. He's there to sell goddamn tickets. That's what he is. He's an old star who's going to just sell tickets and not be a part of the evolution of the younger Bulls or whatever is going to happen in the future, because he's going to be gone anyway, probably this summer. If not this, then next. He's going to retire anyway. And before that, 34-year-old Pau Gasol. Back in 2006, 32-year-old Ben Wallace, who had shown signs of declining in Detroit in years past. This is becoming an old game. And they lucked into Derrick Rose and made it seem like, oh, they did a great job. No, you didn't. You lucked into a guy because you played lousy basketball for 1 year and you had no direction whatsoever. Then you lucked into the first pick and then you thought you had it all under control. They are so bad at their job that I'm actually going to say that a local fan could do better. That's where we're at right now. And I know there are going to be some people there trying, listening to this going, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. These are executives. They're within the league. They know a lot more than you do. Well, maybe they do, but they can't execute it. They can't goddamn execute it. I'll take a random guy off the street who wears a Bulls jersey and I'll give him the reins for a year and I'll bet you good money he'll do better. It's embarrassing.
I like how you said you weren't going to talk about the Bulls, but then we got you so angry you had to go on that rant.
Yeah, I'm pissed. I'm so pissed.
We will talk about Boston a little bit. I will say Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune, he reported whenever that 2017 Nets pick came up, Boston was trying to put some type of protection on it. So, we'll get to Boston later. But just for, I'm with you more.
I respect that. Respect that the Bulls wouldn't want to do it if there's a high level of protection on it. I get that. I get saying no to that. But what I don't get is the insistence of adding veterans. Because if you're trading Jimmy Butler, you're going to be rebuilding regardless. You are not going to be competitive. Like, who the hell cares if you cling on to an eighth seed? And that's not just the Bulls. That is league-wide.
Yeah.
No fans want to see a team just go out and sacrifice the long term to grab an 8 seed for some random season.
Yeah.
It makes zero sense. Either build up from scratch to build something that can withstand like a 10-year window, or do something else. Just don't get stuck in the middle. And I know there has to be teams stuck in the middle once in a while. That's just how the game is. There are 30 teams, but when you get complacent and when you feel it's okay to be in that position, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah. I mean, that's literally what led to the process. Like, it was just year after year of like 8 seed, you know, they got lucky with the year where Derrick Rose tore his ACL and they got to the second round, but like there was no long-term upside, and then they went all in on Bynum and that blew up. And then like the one thing I'm not 100% sure on is if they went to rebuild, I do think they would lose attendance, because Sixers attendance plunged in the years where, you know, the heart of the process, we were close to the dead last in the league in terms of attendance. But now, you know, you go through 2 or 3 years of tanking and like look at how the Sixers have replenished their assets, and now there's excitement around the team again. So I'm with you in that the drive to maintain mediocrity for the sake of business is absurd, because like look at the Warriors, right? Like they were a middling team. No, you know, they had a rabid fan base, but it was pretty contained in the Bay Area, and now all of a sudden they turn into what we know now as the Warriors, and you know, their revenues explode. So I think your overall point saying like if you want to make more money, build a championship contender is spot on.
Yeah, even if it takes time, because you're still in a market that's fiercely loyal. Like, Chicagoans are fiercely loyal.
Yeah.
They look at that. The Bulls have been incompetent for years. It's just now that they've started to get it, you know, have enough of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. No more Bulls or Sixers for a month, Brian.
Yeah, yeah. Unless they, well, I guess they can't trade Okafor. So, we'll have one more brief Sixers note later in this episode. But let's do a couple of quick hits on the other trades that went down. Sarah, PJ Tucker went to Toronto for Jared Sullinger, who was waived, and 2 second-rounders. Do you think this makes Toronto, you know, Tucker and Ibaka combined, is Toronto now the second best team in the East?
Probably. It's hard to really buy into anybody because they've done so much moving around. Mm-hmm. But I love the trade for them. I think, you know, they were a team that really needed to do something at the deadline, and picking up Ibaka and PJ is great. And I also love it because there's the added bonus of him not going to somebody like the Clippers.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to really help whoever he ended up with, and I'm glad that it was out east for once and not here. So, yeah, no, I think it's a great move.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. They, you know, they're framing it as he's the LeBron stopper. I don't know if anyone's a LeBron stopper, but if you have DeMario Carroll and him to throw at LeBron for 48 minutes, that will at least complicate things. And I think, you know, they played Boston last night. They beat Boston. I'm not going to say one game definitively proves they're now the second best team, but if I had to pick a team that is going to face Cleveland in the, you know, assuming Toronto can get to the 2 or 3 seed, so they don't have to play Cleveland in the second round, I would put them in the Eastern Conference Finals as well. So
he's got this Rodman mentality, right? Like he can get under people's skin.
Yeah.
That's something Toronto's been missing. I might be going out on a limb here, but PJ Tucker could potentially be the key piece they acquired over the deadline, even over Ibaka, in terms of having that X factor, that dog that just goes after each and every one trying to get into their heads. That's an aspect they have had nothing of. Like, if he challenges LeBron and he gets LeBron out of rhythm, dude.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've been saying it for a while now, like, or ever since the Ibaka trade, because the Kevin Love injury broke the same day. Like, Cleveland's vulnerable if Kevin Love does not come back fully healthy. And injury optimism has done in plenty of franchises. So, yeah, I mean, Toronto, kudos to Masai Ujiri for realizing, like, you know, Kyle Lowry is early 30s. DeRozan's 28 at the start of next year. Like, you're in your win now prime. There is no waiting. Attack now or forever hold your peace. So good for Toronto for sensing this opportunity and making some big moves. I think, you know, both East and West playoff matchups became far more interesting based on what happened at the deadline. And Sarah, I'm going to throw this next one right back to you because you were super salty when it went down. The Lakers sent Lou Williams to Houston for Corey Brewer and Houston's 27th first rounder, unprotected, but it's going to, you know, be in the 26 to 30 range. So how are you scared of, you know, if the Rockets and Spurs meet up in a second round matchup, are you now more scared of them because of Sweet Lou?
It definitely makes them better, I think. You know, they still have the same defensive deficiencies that they had, but it makes their offense even more potent. And, you know, it kind of felt like there was at least a little bit of a vulnerability there off the bench. You know, and now they just have that one more guy who can hit three. So that's always going to make them more scary, more dangerous. Yeah, I don't want to say I'm scared of them, but I'm definitely not happy about the trade, as you could tell.
Yeah, I think, you know, the interesting thing, I'm with you that, you know, it makes them more dangerous. He debuted Thursday and hit 7 threes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he just immediately, they annihilated New Orleans, and he played a big part in that. So he's going to be a natural fit there, and I think reducing the stress load on James Harden, Pat Beverly, Eric Gordon heading into this stretch run is pretty critical for Houston to keep those guys fresh for the playoffs. So if nothing else, like, Lou's been playing 24 minutes a game in Los Angeles, like, he should be pretty fresh as well. We were talking 2 episodes ago, I think, about that we gave our awards updates And we were torn between Lou Williams and Eric Gordon. So now that they're both on the same team, who do you think wins the award?
Does it matter now? Like, I could see Eric Gordon still getting it just off the reputation and the fact that he's come back healthy. But, man, sweet Lou, right?
Yeah.
Look, it doesn't even matter anymore. I'm well over six men. Just one of the Rocket scars. Maybe they should share it. Let's share the award. Yeah. That'd be fine with me. But I'm kind of confused as to why so many people crapped on the deal from Houston's perspective. I saw on Twitter a lot of it was like, oh, they needed more defense. They should have gotten more defense. And I get the sentiment, but if you now have a team that could go out and get 130 whenever they wanted to, like, who can match that?
Mm-hmm.
It's just the level of firepower they have right now. You would have to score, like, 131 to beat them.
Yeah.
You are really, really not going to get an easy game against these Rockets because they are going to shoot and drive you out of the game.
Yeah.
So I love it. I love it for them.
Yeah.
And they got rid of Corey Brewer. I mean, that's right. That's huge.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah. I mean, his contract, he was actually making slightly more than Lou Williams. Right. They're both signed through 2017-18. I mean, people were really crapping on the Rockets for this trade. They gave up nothing. Mm-hmm. They gave up a late first-round pick, which is, I mean, at that point, like an early second-round pick is almost more valuable because, you know, you can negotiate your own terms. But, yeah, like, I think Lou Williams, like, that offense is now going to be almost unstoppable. And, you know, the Warriors, unless you have a, you know, Cleveland tried to, like, gum them up for a while in both finals matchups, but, like, the Rockets were never going to be able to do that. So your only hope as the Rockets is to just outshoot them. And now you added another guy who could get hot and score 25. Like, I'm not going to say they're going to beat the Warriors, but I think their chances of beating the Warriors increased by adding Lou Williams.
They have similar offensive firepower, at least. Like, that's actually an interesting debate. Like, where do you guys stand on that? Who has the more offensive firepower overall, the Warriors or the Rockets?
Overall, I would say the Rockets, but the Warriors have three of the four best players.
Right, right. So overall, talent-wise, they just, yeah.
Right, and like in the playoffs where you shorten rotations, you know, having that much depth will not be as much of an asset. Also, the Warriors could play defense and the Rockets are much more iffy in that regard. But yeah. I mean, like the point is if Eric Gordon has an off game, all right, cool. Putting in Lou Williams. If Ryan Anderson has an off game, all right, like James Harden's going to score a little bit more. They have so many options now that could explode at any second that, like, if Mike D'Antoni plays his cards right, there could be an upset brewing there. So I like that move for Houston as well. I don't think we need to go too deep into this, but the Nets made two deals. They sent Bojan Bogdanovic and Chris McCullough to the Wizards for Andrew Nicholson, who's on a god-awful contract, Marcus Thornton, and a lottery-protected 2017 first-rounder. They also acquired KJ McDaniels from Houston. I don't think I've seen the official terms, but it sounds like Houston did it for cap space, so I'm sure Brooklyn sent like a heavily protected second-round pick that's never actually going to commit. So they got KJ for free, basically. So, Mort, are you joining me in the Sean Marks fan club?
Definitely. Definitely. And I'm also joining you on the Wizards fan club for getting Bogdanovic, because this is a trade that made sense for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
Bogdanovic is a veteran, and Lord knows the Wizards needed some bench offense. They got that now. And Brooklyn needed a first-rounder. They got that. What I didn't like was giving up Chris McCullough. I kind of liked his potential. I didn't like taking on Andrew Nicholson, but overall, you know, it could have been a lot worse. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to make sense, and I trust Sean Marks to move Nicholson even if he doesn't break out a little bit. Mm. So overall, I like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's the type of gamble, I mean, you know, thanks to what Billy King did to that franchise, just pissing away all their draft picks, it's the type of gamble you need to make for the Nets, because you just need to acquire first-round picks and talent however you can. And, you know, Nicholson is on a bad contract, but he's still, like, I think he's only 26 or 27, and he'll have a chance. Like, I don't think the Nets are just going to bury him on the bench right away. Like, maybe he breaks out in a bigger role there. Or if not, you know, the Nets are not a free agent destination, so you swallow his $7 million for the next 3 years, and you call it a day. It's fine. Like, that's what you use cap space for. But, yeah, I mean...
Or KJ, though.
Yeah, I'm excited for KJ. I think...
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know that he's an actual player. Like, I would assume Houston would have played him at some point in the last 2 years if he could have helped, but during his half a year with the Sixers, he was, you know, he can't shoot, but he's like, he's fun, he's super athletic, great shot blocker. It'll be interesting to see how he fits next to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, because I don't think those two guys could play together, because neither one could shoot, but...
He's a better shooter than Hollis-Jefferson, though.
Yeah,
like he can hit the occasional three. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't KJ also a guy who's on the Spurs radar at some point, Sarah? Like last year at the deadline.
I don't remember hearing. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
But I like his potential.
Yeah.
Personally.
Because for me, that would be sort of a validation. Like, if the Spurs is interested in an American, that's a good indication. Of, oh, okay, this guy's going to be great.
Yeah, this guy could play. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, he's going to play in black and white anyway.
Right.
Same thing.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. He can pretend he's on the Spurs. He's going to lose a couple more games, but he can pretend. All right, so also, Deron Williams got waived and is likely signing with Cleveland if he doesn't... get claimed, which LeBron got his second playmaker. He got his wish. Andrew Bogut as well. Again, I don't think he's actually been waived yet, but they are progressing toward that. Sarah, do you have any ideas of where you'd like to see Bogut end up?
I heard that Spurs supposedly had interest.
Oh.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I did see that floating around. It's an interesting idea. I'm partially in and a lot more out on that at the moment. You know, I don't know. Who could use a rim protector? The thing is, he's not, you know, quite what he has been. So, you know, you can't sign him hoping you're going to get the Bogut of 2 years ago.
Right.
But he could help, you know, somebody who has a hole there. It's worth taking the chance. I think I still, you know, the Spurs have Deadman. I think just play Deadman more, especially since we're just going to have to watch him opt out and walk away in the summer. He might hurt the most of all the bigs that we've had for a short while and had to watch go away. And hopefully Stan Van Gundy isn't going to take him too. It's just, that will be ridiculous. He doesn't even play Boban. Leave Deadman alone.
Yeah,
sorry. I just spiraled.
No, that's fair. Spurs would be fun. I want him on Cleveland just because if they do meet in the finals again, it only seems right that the Warriors had Barzal and now the Cavs would have Bogut. They need to, that would be fun. But we'll see.
I want him to go home. I want him to go home. He needs
to Australia?
Come back to to Golden State because he's actually eligible to go back to Golden State.
Right, that's true. He is.
I mean, and a lot of people didn't think he would be. But because the rule is about the last completed trade, and that trade was from Dallas to Philly, then it actually works. So I want to see him go back there because I remember you, Sarah, at the early part of the season going, well, I kind of like the Dubs, but they are definitely missing Bogut's screen work and they're missing his physicality under the rim. Like, okay, now they have a shot at getting him back. So if they get him back... What could we really say that the Dubs would be missing? Like, anything really?
Yes, and for those very same reasons, I do not want him to go back.
Oh, right,
That's a good point. So we'll keep an eye out on where Bogut lands. We need to talk about two teams now that did not make a move at the deadline, and I want to discuss them in conjunction because I think their names will probably circulate this summer. So Boston we mentioned earlier, they did not make a move. They did not trade the Nets pick, etc. They were supposedly in conversation both for Paul George and Jimmy Butler. The Paul George thing was a surprise because leading up to the deadline, there were a lot of reports like, the Pacers were not even taking calls on him. There was no way they were trading him. And then I think Woj or someone in that last day were like, oh, by the way, the Pacers are taking calls on Paul George. So it seems like Paul George met with the Pacers owner and made it clear that if the Pacers are not in position to be a title contender by the time he becomes a free agent in 2018, he will likely go sign with the Los Angeles Lakers. Sam Amick of USA Today has been really hammering that Lakers point home, and other reports have followed, kind of bolstering that report. So, Mort, do you think, A, that the Pacers need to trade Paul George at the draft? And B, do you think the Celtics erred by not trading for him now?
Well, A, hell yeah. Because they're not going to go anywhere. Like, what kind of deal could they make to put them into that contention? Mm-hmm. They couldn't. I mean, they would have to strike gold in some weird capacity. I mean, like, what are their options out there for them to become a championship contender? Thaddeus Young is not going to get better. Like, I obviously Miles Turner is, but how much can he carry in terms of like, if it's him and Paul George, is that enough? Probably not. Monta Ellis is hot garbage right now. Right. Jeff Teague is, decent, but he's not a complete game changer.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't have a whole lot going on. So obviously, yeah, I trade him as soon as I can. I'm even surprised that they didn't move him on the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Simply because he has more value the longer contract he has left.
Right.
And at the draft, he'll have less. He'll have 1 year left. So, yeah. And B, I think that Boston probably should have done it simply because they would have been a title contender.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me, and this is with the preface of, I believe that Paul is basically saying, I want to be in a position to win a championship, or I'm going to go to the Lakers. I'm going to go home.
Right.
Well, fine. It doesn't really matter if you're in a position to win the championship in Indiana or Boston.
Mm.
Like, as long as you're close to the actual ring, right? And he would be in Boston. So, yeah, I thought it would make sense for Boston to get him. I even think it makes way more sense to get George than Butler, even though Butler is the better player. Because at least PG can play a little bit of small ball four.
Mm-hmm.
He's a better long-range shooter. It seems like he would fit a lot better alongside Al Horford.
Mm.
There's just more to like in terms of George in Boston as opposed to Butler. So yeah, I was pretty surprised, but I'm sure that Indiana didn't get the right package in return, at least offered it. I'm pretty sure that Danny Ainge also hammered home the Lakers point. Like, oh, he's going to leave anyway. I'm not going to give you a big offer. I'm going
right.
to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze because we know Danny loves to squeeze.
Yeah, right, right.
So yeah. Yes to both.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm surprised, especially now that these Lakers leaks came out, that the Pacers did not make a move at the deadline and trade Paul George. There was a report, I forget from who, saying the Pacers wanted like 3 of 4 of Jaylen Brown, right. Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, plus the 2017 Nets pick, which if that's the case, Boston is absolutely right not to trade that much because you're not a title contender if you gave up all that much. And, there is a real possibility that Paul George leaves in a year and a half. I don't think Boston signs him as a free agent because it sounds like he really does just want to go back to the Lakers. So I understand the reluctance to give up that much, especially in terms of players. But the thing with Boston is they are also playing with fire here because, like, yes, that Nets pick, they're going to go into the lottery with a 25% chance of that being a number one pick. But it's also like a 30-some percent chance that it's the number four pick. So that's going to lose considerable value if they unexpectedly fall. And, the team with the best odds does not usually win the number one pick. So, like, I get not wanting to trade it for Paul George if he's going to leave. But if I was running the Celtics, I would have said, we'll trade you 2017 and 2018 Nets picks with Marcus Smart for Jimmy Butler. And I think that is a fair offer for both sides. I can understand the Bulls' reluctance because, you know.
Oh, I can't.
Well, you know, there is the chance that it falls to number four and whatever. And
well, that's why you at the end of the number eight, the 18.
Right.
Look, that's where I'm at. I know I want the number one. Of course I want the number one.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want Markel Fultz? But if the deal is 2017 and 18,
yeah.
in the case of, like, it break glass in case of emergency kind of draft pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know number 17 could be the fourth pick.
Yeah.
So because of that, we're going to add the 18th pick.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. I'll take that. I'm pretty sure that Indiana would have done that too as well for Paul.
Yeah.
Like, that's a damn good deal.
Right.
The question becomes, and this is something I've been wanting to ask you too, if Boston wins the lottery,
mm-hmm.
and they're looking straight up at Markel Fultz,
mm-hmm.
do they pull the 17 pick from any offer, including Butler and George? Sarah?
Rephrase that one second for me. If they get the number one pick?
If Boston wins the lottery and they're looking at Markel Fultz, do they even offer that draft pick to Chicago or Indiana for either Butler or Paul George? Or do they just say, well, we have Markel Fultz if we want to. So the Bulls and Indy, they can just go be themselves.
What I think they should do or what I think they would do?
Would
I think they would keep Markel Fultz.
Mm.
I think just looking at the way that they've, of course, it's different, you know, draft picks versus actual players, but just the way that they've valued those picks and apparently value youth rather than getting an established player, I would think they would keep the pick. But, you know, just before you melted down, Morton, about the Bulls earlier. I was going to try to play devil's advocate a little bit and say, you know, well, you know, we kind of have to look at everything through the prism of the Boogie trade, you know, that apparently the market was depressed and people weren't getting great returns for their players at this particular moment. So, you know, and then you kind of killed that with the Celtics supposedly offering the picks, but we don't know what kind of protections may have been there, what really was offered.
Yeah.
But so I could kind of see why the Bulls wouldn't trade Jimmy. But the Pacers are in a lot tougher spot, as you guys both just mentioned, in that Paul George doesn't seem happy. So, you know, I could see wanting to move him, but I also could see teams being leery of offering a lot when they don't think they're going to keep him. So for the same reason, if I were the Celtics, I would have tried to get Jimmy personally. But, you know, it's like the movie, I think it's called Shop Around the Corner, me bringing out my old movies again. But there's a moment where the guy says, the main character, Jimmy Stewart's talking about when you get a bonus, and as long as you don't open it, you're a millionaire. So, you know, he's like, well, whatever, you don't know what's in there. That's kind of how Danny Ainge has been with these picks, mm-hmm. and hopefully it works out for him. I do kind of understand standing pat right now, although I feel like it's definitely worth it to take the chance on a guy like Butler. But, you know, we'll see what happens. They've got the picks. I think Adam Spinella for B-Ball Breakdown made a great point that, you know, the Cavs aren't going to be this threat for much longer. You know, a lot can change in a few short years, so they don't have to feel pressured to make a big move. But if you have an opportunity to get a really good player, it's worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah,
So you would actually make the trade if Markel Fultz is there. You would trade for either Paul or Jimmy just to get an established guy in there.
Well, see, now I don't feel as comfortable saying that. I meant more at the deadline this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
no,
just because I don't pay enough attention, I've heard a lot of great things about Markel Fultz, but personally, I haven't really watched him, so I couldn't say for sure what I would do in that situation.
It's interesting though, because like Brian, you and I spoke about this at some point early in the season when there were a couple of Gordon Hayward rumors. Like, remember, he's being linked to Boston in the offseason.
Yep.
And I even think Bill Simmons mentioned this the other day. Imagine if Boston keeps their draft picks. They win number one. That's Markelle Fultz. And they're in line to get Gordon Hayward in free agency this summer. Like, then you would look incredibly wise not to trade that pick for a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George, because then you would have the pick and you would have Gordon Hayward, who's like number three on that list, but is still significantly great, right? I mean, he would be so good and a significant upgrade and just a tremendous star for him. So I can see why Boston is kind of waiting it out, but I feel so bad for Al Horford though.
Yeah. Well, because conversely, like, there's a chance. Like, that's what you said is the best case scenario. There is a chance that pick falls to four, Fultz, Ball, and Josh Jackson are off the board, and then it's like you're getting Dennis Smith Jr., like Malik Monk, a strong prospect, but not like a franchise changer. And then say Hayward decides he likes it in Utah and resigns in Utah. Then, like, as you said, at that point, like, Al Horford, he's watching his prime close very rapidly, and if you don't make that move, you know, or like, then I think you regret not making a move at the deadline. So the thing with Boston is we're never going to know what specifically was offered because it's Boston. And we make fun of Danny Ainge a lot for overvaluing assets, but Zach Lowe made a great point in his column the other day. Like, they offered four first round picks to Charlotte last year for the number 9 pick, which they would have used on Justice Winslow. And Charlotte,
wasn't it six?
I think it was four firsts, six overall. Like, I think they were going to throw in a couple seconds. But regardless, the point is, it seems like there's this perception that they are super stingy with their assets, and it's because they are pretty tight in terms of, like, not leaking a specific trade proposal. But, like, there's a chance that they actually did offer both. You know, maybe they really did offer both the unprotected Nets picks and Marcus Smart for Jimmy Butler, and maybe the Bulls said no. Like, we just don't know either way. So I'm with you, Sarah. I can't super fault them for standing pat because, like, as you said, you know, if you get a guy like Fultz and you get another top 5 pick in 2018, like, you have the core of a team that will contend long after Cleveland falls off the hill, but you're still also already, like, not a true title contender, but you have a great, like, you're the number 2 seed in the East right now, and you're adding the number 1 pick to that. So it's very easy to see both sides of this. I would love confirmation one day as to what the Celtics offered for either Butler or George, or what the Bulls and Pacers were demanding, because I have a feeling that the fault this time is not on Danny Ainge. It's from the Bulls and the Pacers being unreasonable with their demands. All right, so one more quick note before we move on to Where Amazing Happens. Just need to say that Ben Simmons is officially out for the year. So that sucks.
But tradition!
Yeah, right. It is now the 5th straight year where a Philadelphia player has missed his entire first season in Philly, counting Andrew Bynum as well. So best wishes to Ben Simmons. Hope he can get his foot healed, because he's a really fun player and I want to see him in action. I'm not just saying as a Philly fan. So we need to now move on to what can only be described as the Lakers' red wedding. A couple days before the trip, 2 days, right? On Tuesday they did this, I think. They fired Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak. They hired Magic Johnson as their team president, and they are in the process of hiring agent Rob Pelinka as their general manager. There's some stuff about, like, I think he needs to divest from his agency before they can actually officially announce him. But from all reports, he is definitely going to be their next GM. Sarah, how do you see this working out with Magic Johnson in charge of the Lakers franchise now?
It's really too early to jump the gun and say, especially if, you know, he's hired somebody who, we'll have to see how this GM is going to look, but if he unlike Ranadive, you know, steps aside and kind of lets the guy run it, it could potentially work out. We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, yeah, a lot of his tweets over the past few years don't inspire a lot of confidence.
Right.
I know that, you know, a lot of people have been saying, why did Kupchak have to go? But it seems like if they were going to bring in Magic, that there was some conflict there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Magic, I don't think, was a big fan of Mitch Kupchak's. I don't know. I mean, I am cool with shaking things up a little bit, but we'll see. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah. It sounds like Pelinka is actually pretty savvy in terms of the salary cap, CBA, all that good stuff. So in that respect,
that's good.
Yeah, a noted upgrade over Vlade Divac, even though both are first-time GMs. Mort, how are you feeling about Magic running the Lakers?
The Lakers so badly want to be the Warriors, don't they? Like, they an agent as a GM.
Yep.
They pilch their assistant coach.
Yep.
The D'Angelo sort of, like, Stephen Curry ideology. Julius Randle, like a playmaking four like Draymond. They are so trying to be the Warriors. I mean, okay, fair enough. You could try to mimic worse teams. So I guess that's applaudable. Magic, I'm kind of concerned with in the long haul. I do love the fact that he came out and said he wanted to have guys smarter than him around him. Mm-hmm. That's going to be necessary because he started studying the CBA like 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Right.
Which just screamed, like internally, I was screaming, Lottie!
Right.
So I'm hoping Magic is wiser. What's concerning to me is Magic's takes on things because he's very impulsive.
Uh-huh.
He is very impulsive. He'll just turn on one game, see something great, and he'll go on Twitter. This guy is the best point guard in the whole NBA. I don't know his name because this is his debut, but he's the best point guard in all of NBA. Like, yeah, relax. Yeah. So I hope he doesn't like tire teams out by calling them all the time. Like, I want that guy. I want that guy because he played great last night.
Right.
but no, I mean, yeah, it all depends on the guys that they have next to him, really.
Yeah.
And Rob Pelinka, that's Kobe's agent. So
yep.
What I'm sitting, I'm just waiting for the Lakers to announce that Kobe in some kind of capacity has been hired because that's going to happen.
Definitely.
That is definitely going to happen in my eyes. And if it's not, then I'll take my lumps. But, oh, I want Kobe to be a part of that Lakers squad so bad. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the way I'm seeing it as, I think you guys are totally right. It comes down to how much Magic empowers the people around him. I'm more encouraged with Pelinka than I am, again, with Vlade Divac. I think, you know, he also, beyond Kobe, he reps Harden, Eric Gordon, Chris Bosh. Like, he's got good relationships with, you know, other players just by virtue of representing them. He knows all the other GMs already because he's had to work with them to negotiate contracts. So it seems like he really could be the key to this whole thing more than Magic. I think Magic may be, you know, he'll have final say on stuff, but like I envision him almost more of a, like as a figurehead role, trying to, you know, bolster the Lakers brand again. And you bring in him, and if more, as you said, if you bring in Kobe, you kind of like get that Lakers reverence built back up after these last couple years kind of tore it down. I could see it helping, you know, it sounds like Paul George doesn't need much convincing to come back to LA, but it, you know, if you have Magic and Kobe like in a free agent meeting with you and they drop their, you know, 10 rings on the table, like that, you know, Pat Riley used to do that too, right? Like they just play the Pat Riley game and drop the rings and say,
so tacky.
Yeah. Then just say, yeah. Count the rings.
Yeah.
So I'm tentatively optimistic. I think, because Pelinka is there, I don't think it will be a disaster, but you do have to hope Magic is less erratic in real life than he is on Twitter. And the Donald Trump experience suggests that might not be the case. So
I was going to say, as long as he's self-aware enough to set up checks and balances,
then
he'll be good, maybe. Yeah. But, yeah, unlike, you know, Vivek, who is not self-aware.
Right.
But and speaking of, can we agree that no one wants to be the Warriors more than the Kings want to be the Warriors?
Yeah. Oh God, they have.
Oh yeah, with Buddy and yeah.
And yeah. Remember, Nick Stauskas was the previous Buddy who shoots like Steph, and he's big like Clay. Okay.
Nick Rocks.
Yeah. Moving on.
Can we say what a disservice it is, though, to try to do those kind of comparisons with players, especially with players?
It's brutal. Like, why would you ever compare anyone to Steph Curry? Like,
you know how many Steph Currys we have in the league right now? One.
Right.
Do you know how many Steph Currys we've ever had in the league? One.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're not going to duplicate Steph Curry.
Yeah.
You got to look at what a young player does well, what he doesn't do well. Whether or not you think your organization can help him improve those things, whether he has the aptitude and the work ethic to actually take to that, and that's all you can look at. You can't say next Jordan, next Steph, next Dirk. All that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The work ethic point is in particular, which actually brings me back to the Lakers for a moment, because imagine if Kobe gets hired. We agree that Kobe had like an insane work ethic, right?
Right.
Like, imagine putting this 500-page CBA in front of Kobe. You could just say, learn this. And he'll look you in the eyes like a tiger and go, I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Definitely would. He would be so great to have in like a front office in the war room at draft time or trade deadline, because he would just be, people would be like, Kobe, what's the rule? It's like, and he'll bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would consistently work to get greater and greater and greater at his job, whatever he ends up doing.
Yeah.
So I think it would be amazing to have him on board. I'm actually pretty optimistic about the Lakers overall.
Yeah.
Even though I'm slightly concerned about Magic in itself, but I don't think they're in a bad position by any means.
No, I don't either. I think a lot hinges on the next 18 months, starting with whether they get their draft pick this year. Because if you add a top three pick to that core, then I could see that being appealing enough to Paul George to say, like, all right, these guys could develop into a title contender. The problem is going to be if they don't make a free agent splash by 2018. You know, Julius Randle is a restricted free agent that summer. D'Angelo Russell will be eligible for a contract extension. Like, unless they find a way to ship off those Mozgov and Deng contracts, those two are going to hang like an anchor around that franchise until 2020. So I'm excited to see how it turns out either way. It's going to make the league more fun. We'll say that much. So we need to, one other clearly amazing thing that happened this week, and I'm going to withhold comment as a Turner Sports employee who does not want to get fired. The Warriors reached out to Turner Sports about, you know, Shaquille O'Neal on Inside the NBA has long had the Shaqt in a Fool segment where he basically just makes fun of JaVale McGee a lot. So according to Mark Stein and Chris Haynes of ESPN, the Warriors reached out to Turner to discuss the Shaqt in a Fool segment. They said that the ongoing negative portrayal is doing unnecessary damage to McGee's reputation, and Steve Kerr even went out and said, like, yeah, you know, I kind of had this negative perception of him, and now he came to the Warriors, and I love him. So, Sarah, what do you think of the Warriors reaching out here?
I can understand why they would do it. I think it's the idea that he's hurting JaVale's reputation, I think, is a little bit of a stretch. Even with Steve saying what he said, that's kind of your problem, Kerr. I mean, you know, all they're showing is clips. Yeah, they're making fun, and if you get to the point where you're kind of making fun of a guy's intelligence, that's probably too much. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the clips are funny. Blooper sports shows have been around well before Shaq, and they will be around after Shaq. I will say that I kind of saw the skit the other night. It was on really late, and I wasn't really paying attention. So that probably was a bit much to constantly single him out, but I don't know. I just think the idea that it hurts his reputation is silly. I think if teams are taking too much from the Shaqt and a Fool segment, then that's a problem for that team.
Right.
You know, Shaq's fault or TNT's fault. But
right.
I don't know. It's just a bit much.
Yeah. Where do you side in the Shaq versus Warriors feud?
oh, I side with the Warriors because I hate the NBA on TNT. I absolutely hate it. I haven't watched it in years now because Charles Barkley is as dumb as they come, and now it's Shaq as well. When they added Shaq, it was just like, oh, great, this show is getting dumber. And it has been. Like, I really, really would like to see them just reshuffle that entire deck. I mean, like, if Kobe doesn't come on board the Lakers, I would love to see him on TNT. That would just, that would be so great to have him be there with EJ and, you know, Kenny, I suppose. It's okay. I just want some basketball talk instead of all this, you know, these gimmicks. It's just gimmicks now, and it's boring and it's trivial. And Shaq, he more or less threatened JaVale, and that's where I think we cross the line. So I'm siding with JaVale and the Warriors in their entirety here. I don't know. Shaq just seems so desperate to me. This is a 45-year-old man who's trying to pick on a young NBA player today. I think Shaq is just, he's missing the game and he's trying to somehow stay attached to it because he's become irrelevant. I mean, look, those are harsh words, and I know that on the surface he's not irrelevant because he's in the media, yada, 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 but for so many, he's become irrelevant because he's a talking head. Like, Durant, even though he's wrong in saying he didn't have any talent or no skill, sorry, Durant said he didn't have any skills, that he was just big and dominant. That's wrong, obviously, but that it's probably a correct example of how the current league views him. Like, oh, yeah, there's that talking head who yells at clouds whenever he can. I don't even remember what he did when he was on the court. So, you know, let the big fella talk. So in that sense, I think he's irrelevant and he hates it. But yeah, definitely on Team Dubs on this one all the way. Just shut up, Shaq. Stay quiet, resign, and take Barkley with you on the way out.
As I agree that the tweets that he sent, you know, like I said earlier, before we started recording, would get most of us fired probably. Yeah, you know, so he definitely crossed the line with the threats, and that was all silly. But he's always been kind of childish and cheesy, so it's not surprising.
As a company man, I can only say I'm excited to watch Inside the NBA the next time it comes on, because the reaction from Shaq should be pretty good. Like, they were pretty good, you know, when Charles got in that feud with LeBron earlier this year. They were good about addressing it on air, openly, honestly, candidly. So I'm sure this will be a big story the next episode. So everyone tune in to Inside the NBA next time it's on.
Get fired, Brian.
To see how this plays out. But you know, Paul Pierce would be a fun guy to add to that team, to the, you know, I don't know.
Oh, right? That's a good one, Paul. Yeah, Paul would be great. And they just added Chris Bosh. I saw that he takes over from Chuck. I just want Chuck and Shaq out of there so they can get like some smart people in who can actually think. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I did see. You're right.
Paul and Chris, that would be terrific.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned. Yes, Chris Bosh has joined the team at least through the end of the season, I think. And then at that point, we'll see what happens with his health. But that should be fun. All right, let's wrap things up with our crushes of the week. It's going to be a little tougher this week because there hasn't been very much NBA action since the All-Star break, but we have had two nights of games. So, Sarah, I'm going to start with you. Who is your crush of the week?
Yeah, I don't really have one since basketball just came back, although I would like to give a shout-out to Austin Rivers, who had two nice games and is no longer, you know, a punchline. So we all need to move past that perception. Yeah. But I've been working on this throwback article about the 04 Pistons for forever because my writing method is terrible and it's kicking my ass. But anyway, as I was watching it or working on it, I was watching some YouTube video and I found a really cool one since we just came out of All-Star break of the 2006 All-Star game, when the Pistons had four guys from their starting lineup in the All-Star team. And there's a nice video of them actually defending and somewhat locking up the West All-Stars for a few minutes. So that's going to be my crush of the week, is the, the 06 Pistons All-Stars.
Defense in the All-Star game.
I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that because I did not watch the All-Star game. I've completely given up on the All-Star game. I just can't have that level of showmanship, strictly showmanship, and no intensity whatsoever. So I love that crush. Definitely. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah.
That was a really good one. Mort, how about you? Who's your crush of the week?
I have two.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And because I have two because one of them isn't entirely legal. It's the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay.
Yeah, because they are doing the rebuilding process right, and they're doing it in a way that where they're not really sacrificing a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they signed Jokey Farrell.
Yep.
Now they got Quinn Cook and mm-hmm. Ben Bensel. These are the kind of small gambles that just makes so much sense for a team trying to build for the future.
Yeah.
Because you test those guys out. If they don't work out, then it's like minimal financial sacrifice
mm-hmm.
on with your search. But if they work out, you get guys on the cheap. And you can keep them on for more years.
Right.
At the same time, they just traded from Noel. We covered that. That's a lopsided trade that they won. He's a youngster. It's fitting to their culture. And they have Seth Curry on this amazing deal. I'm really, really digging what Dallas is doing right now. They are rebuilding. They are sneakily rebuilding in a way that is not like blatant tanking. They are trying to win, but they are still trying to put their primary focus on getting young players in. Just the way they've handled themselves, I mean, so great. I'm really, really impressed, and they look very competent.
Yeah, where have I heard of a team signing a bunch of young players on the cheap and
yep,
taking?
Yep, exactly. Yep.
That sounds very familiar.
They're using Hinkie's approach.
Yeah.
I mean, Hinkie is going to leave his trademark on the NBA in that sense, because now they're taking what Sam Hinkie did, and they're applying certain aspects of it.
Right.
Sort of like, you know, threading it in within their current structure. Look, I love the way the Mavs are doing things right
yeah.
now. And that's thanks to Hinkie as well. So we are seeing a new method of team building,
mm-hmm.
which I really, really appreciate.
Yeah, that's a really good pick because, you know, they've struck out the Mavs, like, since that 2011 title, where their main strategies every summer seem to be like, let's punt on the draft. Let's go after these big name free agents. They struck out year after year. Now it seems like they've yep. kind of recalibrated, and they're like, all right, let's go sign a bunch of young guys. Let's go get Nerlens on the cheap. Yeah, that's a really good call, Mort. Yep. So who, you said you had two. Who's your other?
Yeah, yeah. So when you give up Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott and a 2018 second-round draft pick, and your key guy coming back is Cameron Payne, he must be really good, right?
Uh-huh.
So I can't see it, but I mean, it's an NBA front office, so that's why I have to make Cameron Payne my crush, because apparently he's very, very good. Again, I don't see it. The stats don't support that theory, so... I mean, I'm just this regular old Joe who doesn't have any insight into the NBA like a front office. So I'm just gonna lean on the Bulls and go Cameron Payne, because when you give up a package of that caliber, yeah, he has to be great, like right now.
I wish there was a way to, like, you know how you could, like, favorite a tweet to send, like, a year or two down the line, like, send it back and be like, wow, that was a super cold take. Like, I want to favorite this crush. Because if Cameron Payne turns out to be good, your hostility is going to look really funny a year or two down the line. And frankly, for the
Bulls'
sake...
Well, you know what? We recorded this. You can always just isolate this part.
Yeah.
So.
I'm going to have to make a note to myself. I might just send a tweet to myself. Just be like, yo, remember this podcast.
But look, I mean, when you have a guy who's taken 130 shots to score 106 points... I mean, you got to do it, right? When you have a guy who's played 320 minutes this year and has taken a grand total of 4 free throws, you got to do it, right? I mean, come on, a guy who has his true shooting percentage of 40? I mean, you got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's just take a moment to appreciate that he's been sitting on those numbers this whole podcast, just loaded up in a chamber, and he's just firing off. That's amazing.
That was a really good word. I appreciate your restraint, because not unfurling those earlier was a great surprise at the end. Wow. Okay. My crush of the week, we already talked about him, but Nerlens, I just wish him nothing but the best at Dallas. I really think he's going to kick ass there. He's one of three players in NBA history to average at least 1.6 steals and 1.6 blocks per game across his first two seasons. I believe the other two were, I think it was Hakeem and David Robinson. So, pretty good company there. You know, the Mavs are going to have to sign him for a lot of money this offseason. I would not surprise me if Brooklyn trades Brook Lopez at the draft and tries to max out Nerlens, in which case, you know, Dallas is going to, they're going to have to match because that's why you acquired him. But I really think he was showing more offensive range this year. And I think what's going to annoy me is, like, he's going to have, like, one or two great games on national TV, and everyone's going to be like, oh, well, he's great now because he's, he's away from the Sixers. The Sixers were the problem. That's going to suck, but I'm very optimistic about his long-term chances in Dallas. Mavericks fans, you got a great player for 30 cents on the dollar, and you didn't have to rob the Kings to get him, so congratulations.
And that, at least you got 30 cents.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, someone was trying to tweet at me earlier and, like, compare the two situations. I'm like, they're not even remotely the same. Like, Boogie wanted to stay with Sacramento. Nerlens apparently, like, came to Colangelo and said, I want out. So, I can at least feel better that in terms of value given up this week, the Kings home run. The Sixers and the Bulls are like a nice ground rule double. But, yeah, the Kings stay the Kings. So that will wrap things up for this episode of the NBA podcast. We want to thank you again for listening. Again, just a reminder, you can find us on Twitter at the NBA Pod, and all three of our Twitter handles are in our bio. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave us some feedback. We'd love any reviews you could give. And we are being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I was Brian Toporek, Mort and Sarah. It's great talking to you as always.
You too.
Likewise, Brian.
All right, take care, guys.